Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, March 17th. With us now is Dr. James Hamblin, MD, a staff writer for The Atlantic and co-host of The Atlantic's new podcast, Social Distance. I wonder what that's about. He's a doctor of preventive medicine. He's a lecturer at the Yale School of Public Health and author of a forthcoming book called Clean, The New Science of Skin. Dr. Hamblin, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And I wonder if you could start by reacting to the measures that have been put in place in San Francisco today. And it's really the whole San Francisco Bay Area, a number of counties around the city of San Francisco, a region-wide shelter-in-place policy, as they're calling it. I wonder if you've been looking yet, since you have written so much and I guess are now starting a podcast all about social distancing, if you've looked at what San Francisco is doing and if you think it should be a model for cities like New York or the nation as a whole.
I think that, well, it's obviously not a sustainable order for too long because you create all kinds of other issues when you ask people to do that, but I think it's what's needed right now. And ideally, we can be strategic about what cities are doing this and not simply have the entire country shut down indefinitely all at the same time. I think that creates a sense that what we're doing is not based in evidence and data. And in part, it isn't because we haven't had good testing up to this point, which could inform at what points we can let up on these shutdown measures. So right now, it's very appropriate to take extreme measures like that. And I can definitely see other cities in the country doing it very shortly.
And according to the San Francisco Chronicle, shelter in place means staying inside your homes as much as possible and away from other people for the next 3 weeks, and avoid even small social interactions. No friends over for dinner. They say hit a tennis ball against the backboard, but not with another person across the net, from what I've read, or shoot a basketball, but only by yourself. And you've written about what you call the social distancing paradox. Like, if you do the right thing, you'll think it was an overreaction. Can you explain that?
Right. Well, as with so many things in prevention, if it's effective, then it seems like it wasn't necessary. It's hard to know. But I don't think we're quite at risk of that right now. We're very behind the ball in this country. Mm-hmm. And once you've already committed to the sorts of shutdowns of restaurants and bars and museums and gyms and so much of civic life that we have right now, it's not too much farther to say shelter in place.
Yeah. Well, how does San Francisco's measure, as you understand it, compare to the action that China took that you referred to in The Atlantic as mass quarantine?
Right. There were more legal measures there, which we could end up testing the boundaries of in this country, but to my knowledge, there have not been arrests of people going outside in San Francisco. It's a socially enforced code as opposed to a legally enforced code. And in China, they were doing fever testing all over, and you had to go to a quarantine facility right there and then if you tested positive. And there were certain allowances for people being outside, but others simply weren't. The streets were entirely empty. So there would be legal tests if we started arresting people for leaving their homes on, there's a sordid history of that. So hopefully that won't be an issue for us, and people will abide by the recommendations as best they can.
Can you explain the 6 feet thing? Like, if I walk past someone on the sidewalk, but only 2 feet away from them, but just walk on by, am I at risk?
That's a great question. It's partly distance and partly duration of exposure. So if you've been 6 feet away from a colleague who works in the cubicle next to you day after day, and they turn out to be infectious, you're probably at a higher risk than if you briefly pass someone at a 2 feet distance who is infectious. You know, each breath, each cough, each sneeze is putting out a certain amount of virus, and the amount that you're exposed to varies in terms of just how much was there to begin with. Was that person sitting in that place all day that you later sat in? Or did they just briefly touch an elevator button and you touch the same thing and there wasn't actually enough there to get you infected? So it's an inexact science, but 6 feet is the idea that unless a person coughs or sneezes aggressively in your direction and doesn't cover themselves at all, that if you're not spending a prolonged period at that length, that you mm-hmm. should be okay.
And if they're not coughing or sneezing or something at the moment that you pass them 2 feet away on the sidewalk, no risk?
You can't say zero, but the chance of it's not known to linger in the air for prolonged periods. And at that distance, if you briefly pass someone, mm-hmm. there would be a very low chance. So that's why people are not advised against taking walks and going outside at the moment, but just trying to keep your distance.
Let me ask you a couple of testing questions, since you emphasize the ongoing need to get much more widespread testing. Tests are becoming more available, not available enough that every asymptomatic person who wants to get a test can get one, just so we can figure out, you know, how prevalent it is in the population, period. But what do you see as the role of testing?
We just still need far, far more. And that would allow us to be more strategic about who needs to be quarantined, who needs to take fully 2 weeks off, in total isolation just because they had some concerning symptoms. You know, that's a big difference in a person's life. If you could if you could be assured that you just had a normal cold and a little fever and you tested negative, so you can go back to your family versus trying to quarantine yourself in a single room or wherever people are taking off to self-isolate. And then we also will need very shortly some serology tests, which is a totally different kind of test, which can tell us not just whether the person currently has the virus, but whether they've had it in the past. And that would give us more data on how many people have already been through this, how many people had mild or asymptomatic cases, and what our levels of immunity in the population right now. We don't know for sure the virus can't reinfect people, but it's not clearly happening at any large scale.
Do you envision the possibility of a sort of army of immune people who've gotten sick and gotten better? Like, I heard New York already has a number of people, I think I heard 60-something, but I'm not swearing by that number, who were treated in hospitals for coronavirus and released.
That is my hope.
Yes, go ahead. Yeah. No, you go.
No, my hope is that I'm quite hopeful that that happens and that it proves that this is like most other viruses, many other viruses, in that you achieve a period of immunity thereafter, whether it's months or years or decades, that can vary. But there have been case reports of people being reinfected. And so I wouldn't, operate without any, throw caution to the wind entirely once you've tested positive and gotten better. But it's my hope that those people can be really effective to us in terms of emergency response and helping out, especially if we're running low on healthcare providers because they are, for example, afraid of getting sick themselves, that this could be reassuring at least to people if they have partial or complete immunity.
How good are the tests, by the way? I think I heard I did hear a report of a few false negatives in TNEC.
Yeah, there can be false negatives. There's the ideal, the recommendation right now is actually that people get 2 tests in order to feel confidently assured that they do not have the virus. But the value of that test is also partially determined by the pretest probability, how likely it is that a person actually has it. So if you've had a high-risk exposure and now you have a fever and cough and you test negative, the value of that test is different from if you're just a random asymptomatic person who's been in isolation for a while and they test you and it's negative. But yeah, it's not a good enough test that you can say for certain that a negative value does indeed mean there's no virus.
Marilyn in Fresh Meadows, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. So I actually have two questions. One is that I just got a chart in the mail over on the phone that says that if you only expose yourself to fewer people, of course, then it grows much slower, the infectious part. So now we're hearing like only 10 people. So how close to that number is safe? The second part is, what are the chances of state by state not allowing you to cross the border with Passover coming and Easter? That's a big question on people's minds.
Marilyn, thank you so much. So, Dr. Hamlin, one of the things that I'm seeing is that the federal government is using that 10 people figure right now. Don't gather in groups of more than 10. San Francisco is really closer to zero, or maybe at zero, except for people you live with and people who you have to come in contact with for essential professional reasons. New York City is closer to San Francisco than it is to the national 10, but it's not quite there. So if nothing else, we're getting mixed messages from different levels of government.
Right. And part of that is built into the system. When you have an outbreak response, you should have local there should be local differences. The people in San Francisco should ideally not have to have the exact same levels of distancing at the exact same time as the people in Los Angeles. You don't want to just blanketly shut down a whole country, and there should be a disease like this will flow in hot spots, and it'll be worse in one place at times than another. I mean, and each of these is an exact number, in that if you really wanted to err toward total safety, you would just say everyone needs to absolutely never leave their home and don't socialize in any way, don't do anything at all. And when you make allowances for, say, up to groups of 10, or make allowances for, say, you can go out to the park, but you can't go out after 10 p.m., or you can, you know, these are lines that are drawn to try to help people maintain some semblance of, humanity and connection, but they all come at some higher risk of spreading the disease.
And she asks about Easter and Passover, which, you know, there is such a strong kind of cultural and personal need that people feel to gather with their family members for those holidays and things like that. But we know weddings everywhere are being canceled, even funerals in many places are being canceled. There's the cancellation of Mass by the New York Archdiocese. It's not just the St. Patrick's Day parade, right? Also Sunday Mass not happening in the New York Archdiocese. So I guess people have to make their own decisions, but I think the public health recommendation would be, except for people who you live with, don't do Easter and Passover this year. Do you think that's what they will say when asked that question specifically?
You know, I think that's definitely the recommendation that I would make. I think it's really hard to, you know, there's not going to be legal prohibitions on things in the same way that there were in China. There can just be pleas to say, you know, think of your family. This is not something that, you know, should be done right now. And when you leave it to people to make up their own minds about these decisions, I think hopefully most people will agree that they don't want to risk, infecting someone in their family. And so it's better to defer this year and not do it.
We're getting a call from Barcelona, Spain. So Tom in Barcelona, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York, Tom.
Hi, Brian. I'm calling from lockdown here in Barcelona, and I just wanted to say that I'm pretty flabbergasted by this sort of back and forth going on in America right now and about whether the measures being taken are too strong or not strong enough, because I can tell you that here in Spain, it's a very, very extreme situation. I've been in Barcelona for 6 years, and I don't think I or anyone here has ever lived a situation like this. The city is absolutely 100% shut down. And I think the mood is that the citizens here are very content and somewhat proud of their government for the measures that we've taken, which I think is the sentiment in Italy as well. And there's some sort of political bickering going on, especially with Catalonia and the Basque Country, regarding the role of the central government. But I think that bickering aside, people are really 100% behind the lockdown. And I've never seen the type of solidarity that I'm seeing here as well, the way people are respecting the measures, keeping distance, big long lines at supermarkets with 3 feet between each person. So it seems like your guest, the doctor you have on today, is a bit reluctant to say whether a lockdown is warranted. And I just find that shocking when you have 200 million people in Europe right now living under those conditions. And I think it's clear as day that it's warranted at this point.
Tom, before we even get a response from Dr. Hamlin, who's pretty aggressive in what he calls for in the U.S. context, what's lockdown? Can you define or describe the main elements of it that may be beyond what New York or even San Francisco are doing?
So absolutely everything here is closed with the exception of supermarkets and pharmacies. We are in a state of emergency, which is the second time that has ever been occurred in the history of Spain's democracy. The other time was in 2010 for an air traffic controller strike. So that there's sort of a legal framework that implies that reduces the rights of individual citizens. So, for example, there's no longer freedom of movement. So I can leave my apartment to buy food, to attend to a person or family member in need, to go to the pharmacy, or to walk a dog. Although even walking a dog, you need to maintain distance between other people. And my coworkers from Italy, and I understand that there it's even more extreme. So you have to sign a document declaring the reason why you're out. And if the police find out that you've left your home for a reason other than that which you've declared, you're fined for the first offense, and the second offense is a sentence of jail time. So here, I know the police have also been fining people for being out of their homes, but I just want to stress that I think really everyone here is behind that. There's not pushback because the ICUs in Spain have had the number of people in ICU in Spain has tripled, I believe, in the past 2 days. So they are really trying to get out in front of this.
Wow. So, Dr. Hamlin, I know that you've written in The Atlantic about Europe as well as China and other parts of the world. So is what Tom is describing familiar to you? And then how would you relate it to the United States?
Yeah, it is. And I fully expect it'll happen here. And what we need is urgent deployment of every federal resource, every sort of military deployment, emergency mobilization of resources. We need tents for food and emergency medical care and triage, and we need that immediately. We need people to have social safety net support so that they can stay at home, and we are behind the ball on that. And I only suggest that, and I'm seeing a lot of support for the shutdowns too that we have. We have pretty much bipartisan political moment in a lot of ways right now where people are accepting this aggressive action in a way that they would not have 2 weeks ago. I only suggest that we don't have the safety nets in place in the U.S. to do the total shutdown for very long, and we need them to come together. So, from a purely public health perspective, everyone should absolutely stay home. And I think we have a lot of other issues to address at the exact moment that people are asked to do that so that we don't make the problem potentially even worse.
When you say we don't have the safety net, do you mean the economic safety net?
Yeah. So there are people in the U.S. who will avoid seeking care because they can't afford the hospital bills. And even if our government agrees to make testing available, when we have enough tests, people will stay away from the hospital because of the possibility of having to go into treatment and then maybe ending up in the ICU and getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical debt and going into bankruptcy and losing everything because of that. And I'm not saying people would sooner die than incur that, but if they're on the fence, people will do that. And people will keep trying to go to work as much as they can if they can't make rent without going to work. And everyone who has the possibility, for whom it is possible at all to completely shelter in place, should. And for everyone else, we need the support that makes that possible right away. So I don't want to seem like I'm not favoring shutdowns at all. I just know that we don't have the capacity to do them for very long in this country without creating many other health and social and economic catastrophes.
Tom, thank you for that report from Barcelona. So to that end, and we're almost out of time, but you're not an economist, you're an MD, but I see you tweeted positively about the Mitt Romney and others' proposal for a $1,000 check to be sent to every American. I think some people say $1,000 a month, like the Andrew Yang model from his presidential campaign, you know, but maybe in that case more directly targeted at individuals who are affected economically. I also see that President Trump reportedly is asking Congress today for an $850 billion stimulus bill that may be targeted more in terms of Trump's priorities for Wall Street. I don't know that. But do you have any recommendations from your perch as an MD, but who also is commenting on the economics, what you would like to see the government do in this respect?
Sure. And the economics are beyond me. But from a purely public health perspective, people need to know immediately today that they can indeed stay at home and aren't going to lose their home. That means they're not going to be evicted. They're going to be able to go to the supermarket or order delivery food or whatever they need to do in order to shelter in place and afford their medications, because so many people are living paycheck to paycheck that the second that you close the restaurant or wherever a person works and they don't have cash in hand, there's this double level of panic of, am I going to get sick? But I mean, am I going to be out on the street? Am I going to be unable to feed my kids? And that cash in hand immediately will allow people to not feel like they have to panic and not feel like they need to go out and possibly spread the disease.
You want to plug your podcast, Social Distance, and tell people what they can hear on it and how to find it?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's called Social Distance. It's something we're doing with The Atlantic, and just trying to keep up daily conversations on what the major concerns in the country are about the outbreak. I mean, we're looking at a global view, too, but especially in the U.S. and talking to the many writers and editors around The Atlantic who've been covering it and trying to take into account all the difficulties that go into this new way of living.
Dr. James Hamlin, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to invite you in on the conversation too. If you've got a question about a national news item, whether it's something you want to know about the election or the Trump administration or anything else you think might fall under the national politics umbrella, give us a call and leave us a message with your name, where you're calling from, and your question. We'll collect those and keep them in our pocket for when I'm speaking with someone who can give you a good answer. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255, 844-745-TALK. See you tomorrow.